Welcome back to another episode of Wander Working, the podcast where we explore the intersection of travel and work. I'm your host, Andrea, and today I have an awesome guest I got to meet through my travels in Portugal. Her name is Veronica Peterska. She's going to kill me because I never get her last name. But I met Veronica traveling at the Albufeira Nomad Fest conference that I attended. And she was one of the speakers there. And her talks changed my whole life because as someone who is traveling and nomading and going about the world, one thing that I have been absolutely slacking on has been my health and fitness. And Veronica is a nutritional health coach who also has an expertise in behavioral neuroscience. So we're getting real sciencey in this episode. Also, forgot to mention, Veronica is also a digital nomad, so she knows all the pitfalls of what the lifestyle is like and how to overcome them to live a better and healthier lifestyle, as well as all the foods that will feed your brain and help you become a better person. So if you're interested in jumping on your 2024 fitness goals, but you still want to travel, keep listening. She's going to give some great tips at the end on how to do that. I never really got to ask you this in person, but I wanted to ask you how you started digital nomading.
Oh, that goes to a breakup. I am one of the lucky ones with an EU passport. So I have both my U.S. citizenship and then my parents are from Czech Republic. So I also have EU citizenship, which makes it really easy for me to travel without needing visas and live abroad. And so I had always wanted to take advantage of this. And I always said I wanted to live in Europe at some point, whether that was Czech Republic or Spain. Like I was really, that was something I really wanted to do. And my ex, he was always like, why? And I was like, what do you mean why? That sounds so cool. Like I want to do it. And it was sometimes it would create a little bit of tension in our relationship and I would bring it up and he'd be like, oh, why are you bringing this up again? And I was just like, what do you mean? And so I was even like looking at places where he could follow his career to certain cities. And then we ended up breaking up and I was like, great, I am single. This is now the perfect time to move abroad because what if I start dating someone else who like also doesn't want to live abroad? If I'm single, why not go move abroad now? It was literally smack dab in the middle of COVID. So I couldn't really move abroad anywhere. Everything was like a little riskier. But then I stumbled upon like Selena's digital nomad program. And I was like, okay, it would probably be hard to move abroad right now, but what if I just traveled? So I became a digital nomad kind of in place of moving abroad. And then I was like, wait, this is really cool. Like I can just go visit a bunch of countries instead of picking one and moving there. And so that's kind of how it started. It was very much like in the middle of COVID. And I still do want to move somewhere and find a home base abroad for a year. I think it would be really nice to have your cheese shop and have your coffee shop and have your little community and have a little routine that I make in a different place and build a little bit more of a home in one place. That will definitely come. But until then, I love just being able to travel freely and check out a bunch of cultures and a bunch of places. So yeah, that's the backstory.
Being single is probably the best time to explore all those very selfish desires and dreams that you have. I didn't have quite the same case with my breakup. Actually, my ex was quite the traveler, but I did fall into, and this is totally on me, I fell into the trap of following him around the world. And mm-hmm. I think after I became single, it was just like, okay, this is scary. Now I got to do this alone, but now I can go wherever I want. For example, I always wanted to go to Spain. He didn't particularly like Spain, so we never went to Spain. But first thing I did when I became single, I decided, you know what? I'm going to buy a one-way ticket to Spain. And then I bought a one-way ticket to Spain because there was nothing else holding me back or no one to tell me or convince me otherwise, which is really good for me. I think it's a great path to self-discovery traveling alone. I always tell my friends, don't wait for anybody. You want to go somewhere, go. You'll make friends on the trip or in the country you go to. So I'm all for those solo traveling digital nomad journeys. I think it's a great place to start.
It definitely fuels a lot of confidence, realizing, oh, I can do this on my own. I can navigate an entirely new culture, new language on my own. Like, I can go on a day excursion on my own. And when you do all those things, then you meet new people. You never really are alone. But yeah, everybody has the same experience. It's this, you're so terrified to do it. And then you do it and you're like, oh my gosh, that was amazing. Why was I ever afraid to go do that? That brought me so many experiences, confidence, friends. Yeah, I think I haven't really met anybody who's had the opposite experience. However, I think sometimes those first trips are really impactful, really fun. Like, you have challenging moments, but like, there's so many highs because it's your first time. And then you expect every trip to be like that. And then you go to a place on another solo trip and it's not like that. And you're like, wait, hold on, what happened? Like, why is this not the same? Like, why was this not as fun? Like, why am I so lonely? And so the first time is definitely the high and super exciting. And then I was recently chatting with a friend who is a little bit younger and is like a little bit newer to solo traveling, even though she's done a good bit. And she's like, I'm honestly in these countries and this trip just is not as fun as my last trip. And I was like, you know what? Like, sometimes it's really social and the people at the hostel you're in happen to be really fun people. And then sometimes it's not like that and it's a little slower and you're sadder. But those can be times of like self-reflection and growth and trying to figure out, why am I so sad? Can I still make this a positive experience? So like, you're either alone and it gives you the opportunity to make a lot of friends, or you're alone and it gives you space to grow and learn. So sometimes it's not as like fun and crazy, but they're both like huge growth opportunities.
Yeah, I've had moments of both of that. And actually I feel like my first trip was really condensed. I had like several weeks where I just wasn't meeting anybody in the places I was going to. It just didn't feel the same. And I did feel loneliness, but I got comfortable in that. And I learned to have a good time by myself and enjoy my own company as if I was hanging out with a friend. So that was really great for me because I learned to deal with that loneliness. And then before I knew it, every city I was hitting, like, I was meeting more people. And I was like, oh my gosh, I wish I had some alone time. But it goes to show you that a lot of the places you go to, it's not always about the place. It's usually the people you meet that kind of leave that mark, that kind of make that difference. Because you could say, hey, I went to Brazil and I had an awesome time. And I could tell you, I went to Brazil and it sucked. But it was honestly probably because I didn't meet the right people. I didn't have the right experiences. My mindset maybe was different. So it all depends on things like that, for sure.
So much of it really is the people. Like, when I think back on my favorite places, it mostly is what mental state I was in, because there have definitely been a couple of places where I've just been like going through a really hard time. And I don't have as fond of memories of those places because I wasn't having a particularly great time. I was going through a hard time. And so they don't stick out in my mind as much. And then I've been in places where you wouldn't expect them to be my favorite places, but it was really because of the people I was with. But I think it's the lifestyle has taught me how to be flexible and adjustable to my surroundings. Sometimes I am lonelier, and so it's a more reflective period. And I'm like, okay, that's okay. We'll like do more. Or it's more outdoorsy. So I don't care so much about my appearance, but I'm like getting outside, getting in nature. I'm not wearing a ton of makeup. And sometimes I'm in a city and I'm going to restaurants and I like glam up and I get dressed nicely and I'm being more social. And so it's just cool. This is the setting that I'm in. I'm going to adapt. I'm going to adjust. And then I'm here. And okay, cool. This is what my life looks like now. And it's not all the same. But I think the faster you can adapt to where you are and realize, okay, maybe it's not how I pictured it, but it's fine. I'll make the best of it. The better your experience is, for sure.
Oh my gosh, there's one skill that I've gotten really good at with this whole digital nomad lifestyle. It's adapting to new places. I feel like I like to call myself a little chameleon because I can shape myself to my surroundings. The awesome part about that, though, is I feel like I've lived like 10 different lives in all the countries that I've gone to. I've gotten to know different versions of myself. There's like the nature girl that here in Peru, I did so many treks, climbs, whatever. And that was in Cusco. But then I came back here to Lima weeks later and I'm a city girl and I'm adapting to my environment here. So yeah. It's awesome. You get to live so many different lives, meet so many different kinds of people, which is amazing. But I'm finding myself through that, through getting to try out different things. Because part of this whole journey that I've been on with digital nomading is trying to figure out who I am and where I want to settle down or where I want my home base. Because I know you're still trying to pick out your home base. I am having the same dilemma.
No, it's 100% San Diego. So I am from San Diego. My whole family is here. San Diego is going to be my home base. And because I know that, I'm like, oh, I'll make my way back here because I'm currently visiting family in San Diego. So I'm like, oh, let me go experience the world and travel as much as I can because ultimately this will be my home base forever.
So that's awesome because now you have a jumping off point where you can go to in between travels. I'm still, I guess I would say the US is still my jumping off point, but I don't know if I want that to mean like my permanent home base. I don't know if I see my life or at least the rest of my life. I'm imagining a life where eventually I get tired of jumping around. I don't think of myself as coming back to the US for some reason, but I also don't know where I'm going.
I do really like what you said where, so I'm not necessarily discovering places that I want to settle in, but I am discovering my favorite version of myself because I kind of view traveling as these trial periods of, okay, I live here for a little bit and you act and behave and you have different habits in one place and you go somewhere else and you spend your time differently and you have a different group of people around you and you see how you feel and how you act in this environment and you're, oh, I'm testing myself out in all these places. What's my favorite version? Or what did I like about this place and how I acted here? And what did I like about this and my habits here? And so I almost, they're like internships trying to figure out, okay, what's the best match for me? Who do I like to be? What do I want to keep? What do I want to let go of? Which places suit me better? Yeah, these trial periods, not just of location, but also character and how you spend your time and energy and things like that.
Oh my gosh, I love the way you put that. Because I think I'm still interning. But yeah. I also wanted to ask you one more thing. How often are you moving around?
So that has definitely changed a lot. For my first 7 months as a digital nomad, that was my first stint. I was working full time and I was moving around probably every week to 2 weeks. So pretty quickly. And towards the end, my last month, I was kind of like, I don't want to move. Like, I was in Guatemala for 2 weeks and I was like counting down the days till my return to get home because I was like, I'm so tired. And so then when I set off on my second stint, which has now become like a more permanent lifestyle, I let go of my lease and I was like, okay, no lease, travel full time. I was like, I'm going way slower. I don't want to be anywhere for less than 4 weeks. And for the most part, I've been able to stick to that. And then during the summer, I was moving around a little bit quicker for about 2 months and it was exhausting. And I have realized that it's just, obviously, I prioritize my health a lot, being a health coach and having a background in nutrition and science. It's really important to me. And moving around too quickly is just, it's way too difficult to be consistent with workouts, always having a space to cook well, especially sleep. Like bouncing around so much really disrupts my sleep. And I am someone who naturally struggles to sleep. So then when you add the component of traveling really quickly, that really has an effect on my sleep and then my mental health. And if I'm sleep deprived, I don't have the energy to get up for a workout. I don't have the motivation to cook as well. I'm not as focused in my work. And like altogether, my mental health, my productivity, my quality of life really suffers. And so for me now, I have to be somewhere for a month. And then I'm like, okay, cool. A month is enough to settle, have a routine, have a good quality of life while having enough time to also experience all the things after work, on the weekends, do day trips from one central space. So for mental sanity and health habits and routines, I really prefer to stay in one place for a month or more.
I tried very hard this last time to stick to that 1 month rule in one place. Oh, it was hard. It was just like, I wanted to see so many things. I'm very hyper and I get excited and quickly, and I just want to run to the next place, or a friend tells me, hey, there's this cool place we can stay at over here. And then I never like to say no to any opportunities. I just go, and I need to learn to say no. But I'm so glad you segued into this, because that was one of the topics you presented at the Digital Nomad Conference in Albufeira, is how to eat healthy, one, because you had a couple talks, but also another thing that you pointed out that really illuminated the light bulb in my head is building a healthy routine. Because with this lifestyle, routine is not always easily present unless you are very intentional about making it happen. And I struggle with that, because throughout my nomading, I had no time to prepare good food, focus on my fitness goals. And I remember really struggling with this and sitting with this pit in my stomach, I know I'm not where I want to be, but it seems like the only time I am able to actually put an effort into feeding my body good and treating my body good is when I'm in between trips, but I want to travel all the time. So how is that going to work for me? And then you popped up on stage as I was having these thoughts, and I was like, oh, perfect.
A good friend who is a travel blogger, she put it really well when she said, I feel like I'm always getting healthy rather than maintaining health. So she'll be traveling for a period, and then she gets home and she gets healthy again. And then she travels again, she loses all her healthy habits, and then she has to go home to get healthy again, rather than being able to maintain a consistent level of health. I find that a lot of digital nomads end up going home because they get burnt out and get exhausted, and they go home to lose weight, start going to the gym, start prioritizing their health. And I was looking up some digital nomad statistics, and the top five reasons why digital nomads go home is because of health reasons. One is travel fatigue, and second is medical reasons. And we are just honestly bad at prioritizing health, because we're like, I could go see this thing, and why would I go to the gym when I can do this social happy hour, meet new people? And so it's almost like we short-term fun plans instead of our long-term health. And it's really about figuring out how to implement health into your lifestyle. You are not going to be going to the gym 7 times a week, and you are not going to be meal prepping chicken and rice in your kitchen, because you're probably staying at a hostel or an Airbnb that doesn't have a fully furnished kitchen. So it's okay. What you were used to at home, the rules don't apply. You have to figure out things that match the lifestyle and fit them in. Otherwise, you're going to abandon them because you don't want to quit traveling right now. It's fun. That's what we want to be doing. So you have to figure out how to make it work for the lifestyle.
Yeah. And that was what I was wondering, because you have such a good understanding of what the digital nomad lifestyle is like. Is that why you decided to become a health coach specifically for digital nomads?
I was struggling with it on my own. I had a really strong background in fitness and nutrition and traveling so fast. I was like, oh my goodness, this is hard for me. I can imagine how hard it is for someone who hasn't been working out consistently for as long as I have, or who doesn't have the nutrition background that I have. And so I saw that there was a need, because I was struggling and I had a very solid foundation of nutrition and fitness. And so I went into that because I knew it the back of my hand, and I had personal experience, and it really came from a place of me solving it for myself. I since have transitioned from digital nomad health to neuroscience-based health coaching for mental health and brain health, because that's what my background is. That's where my passion lies. And so I've transitioned, but I still live the lifestyle.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've been presenting a lot of really interesting talks about how the foods we eat affect our brain. And this is something I never thought about, because you think I eat this bread every day that's full of processed sugars, refined sugars, and white flour, and it's going to make me fat a little bit, and I'm going to see it in my tummy. But you don't think about how it's going to impact your brain. That's actually something that's never occurred to me until I started seeing your talks about it. And I was thinking, wow, could I be performing at a more optimal level, at least being in the sense of being more productive, more focused, a little bit more aware and awake if I change the foods in my diet? And it's just something I hadn't considered before. And you seem to have such a wealth of knowledge on this topic.
So here's the thing. You're not the only one who hasn't considered it before, because it is like a brand new field. Like, the research is just now coming out. But the biggest misconception is we take a look at food and only see it as calories. But food does not just have calories. It doesn't just have energetic value. It has micronutrients like iron, magnesium, zinc, potassium. It also has the vitamins like vitamin A, C, D, B, like E, K, like all of the vitamins. And it also has fiber, protein, fats, complex carbs, and all of those things. They're not just in the food to be in the food. They all have a role in our body. They are the raw materials of what our body needs to grow, repair itself, heal itself. So we think food, we think calories, we think weight gain, but we don't think about, oh, they get broken down and our body uses it into extremely important functions in the body. Most people understand, okay, we eat protein, we eat meat, gets broken down and it goes into our muscles. That's about the extent of people thinking about the building blocks of food. But our brain is so nutrient needy. It needs so many things to run optimally, especially to make neurotransmitters. We need vitamin C. We need all the B vitamins. We need so many things just to create neurotransmitters to feel happy, to feel motivated, to feel tired when it's time to sleep, to feel energized. And all of those nutrients come from food. So we make a huge mistake looking at food just as something that causes us weight gain. And if we could start to look at food as, I am making this dietary choice to supply my brain with what it needs to function optimally, I think we would start to view food through a totally different lens than food equaling weight gain, as many women do.
Yeah, I just feel like we're so programmed to be so aware of that part, but we don't think about, like, food can make me smarter. Food can help me have better quality of sleep and therefore better quality of life. Because I saw a scary statistic the other day. Okay, don't fully quote me on this, but it said something like, our generation, when we get old, about 50% of us, or it was a big number, actually. I'm not sure if it was 50%, but it was definitely up there, are likely to get Alzheimer's. And I was just freaking out, because for me, like, that's a really scary disease. I know maybe some of us have grandparents or family members who have it and have dealt with it. But the fact that the number was so big for our generation, and I was just thinking, but why our generation? Is it something in the food? What's going on?
Yeah, no, it's really great that you asked why our generation. That is really important, because you recognize that it's something specifically with us and what we're doing rather than a genetic risk. There is a genetic risk to Alzheimer's, but a small percentage of Alzheimer's cases are actually 100% genetic risk alone. Most Alzheimer's is actually due to lifestyle. And what we need to be focused on is making those lifestyle changes early, because by the time you start developing Alzheimer's symptoms, a majority of your brain cells are already damaged. So we want to prevent that damage from even happening by making lifestyle choices in a preventative fashion, because
there's already being damage done to those brain cells before we even experience any sort of symptoms. So my goal is to educate people on these lifestyle changes so that they don't even have to experience those symptoms, and they're getting coverage before, and they're getting protected before that even happens. Because what we're consuming, the way we're living our lives, the way we're moving, not getting enough exercise or movement, even socializing, like all these things have an impact on our brain health. Things that we wouldn't even associate with brain health. We're accumulating all this damage through our lifestyle. And then that results in Alzheimer's or various forms of dementia. But luckily, there's so much that we can do. So if I can spread that message, hopefully those numbers don't reach 50%, but they stay much lower.
So if you don't want to get Alzheimer's, contact Veronica for some coaching services. No, but I'm actually really glad you touched on that topic, because it's probably not something that crosses most of our minds. I would say my demographic with the people I reach out to are anywhere between 20, mid-30s, and we're probably at our optimal health right now in terms of life. So that maybe this is not something that crosses our mind every day. But I've been spending a lot of time with older folks lately. I've been visiting my grandparents, and I've seen like them struggling with health or struggling with diabetes. And I'm starting to see that the decisions we make today have a very real impact on us in a couple of years. I don't want to wake up like struggling to remember, because I've lived such an awesome life traveling around. I don't want to forget that. I also want to be able to enjoy foods without depriving myself or going on really restrictive diets. So that was one thing that I was really grateful for when we had our coaching session, is finding out little ways to incorporate changes in my life that have big impacts, because a lot of it has to do with breaking habits or breaking myths and just doing small changes. They have such a big compound effect.
Absolutely. And that's why I'm not a fan of anything restrictive, because it's not sustainable. So if you do something restrictive or extreme, you might see quick results, but then those results will also very quickly reverse themselves. And second of all, I am in the field of mental health, and a lot of restrictive diets can cause unhealthy mental patterns. They can lead to eating disorders. If you lose weight, you feel really good, you get compliments, you get validated. And then if you gain the weight back, all of a sudden you don't feel as good, you don't get validated, you don't get those compliments, you start tying your appearance and your weight to your self-worth. There's such an unhealthy combination between dieting and mental health. And my goal is really to support people with their mental health and brain health. And so instead of choosing diet camps, should I be vegan? Should I be keto? Should I be paleo? I really focus on making nutrition choices that have a positive impact on your brain, because your brain controls so much of your lived experience. It regulates whether everything is gloomy and dark or bright and happy and exciting, or whether you have confidence in being able to remember the things that you're supposed to do or have the motivation to complete certain tasks and then feel good about yourself and proud and accomplished. And so really my goal is to help people make like brain-focused health choices, because I really think at the core of it, like, what do you have if you don't have your brain health or good mental health?
That's so true. Honestly, with the talks that you've given, I've become more aware of not just limiting portions, but also looking at the ingredients and seeing the quality of foods. And one great piece of advice you gave me, as someone who's trying to fit all these lifestyle changes in a traveling kind of lifestyle, was to always try to find ingredients in their rawest form. Like, instead of buying a guacamole mix, buy that avocado, break it in half yourself and make it. It's a little extra step, but at least you know what you're putting into your body. So I wanted to ask, for all my people who are out there traveling, what are some other tips you can give us to stay on track in terms of one for food and one for fitness? Because I think I struggled with both those areas heavily my first time traveling. as a nomad?
So I like to come up with a plan for what I can do based on the context that I'm in. So if I'm living in a city and I have easy access to a gym, I'm getting a gym membership, and I'm going to get a gym membership that conveniently fits into my life. So if I'm going to a co-work every single day, I try and find a gym next to my co-work, and I have a gym routine that I follow. If I am not in a city, and let's say I'm in the countryside or something, and there's no access to a gym, I then switch to maybe my resistance band workout. And I have a resistance band program that I follow. Maybe in another place, I also have a YouTube channel that I go to, and I follow a YouTube channel where I really like her workouts, so that I come up with all the excuses that I could have. And then I come up with a plan for every single excuse. So it's, oh, you don't have access to a gym? I've already figured out that excuse because I follow this program. I sit and I make a plan. So in context, I know, okay, when I'm traveling in this type of area, I do this type of workout. When I'm in this type of area, I do this type of workout to fit my context. But then I also do that for energy states. If I'm really high energy, I do this type of workout. If I'm feeling really unmotivated, maybe I actually just turn on a 20-minute yoga class, and that is enough to move my body. So that's my fitness hack. Be prepared for every physical situation you're going to be in, as well as mental state and situation.
Yeah, like removing all the barriers as much as you can mentally, so you don't even have to think about it. You just go. I actually applied that tactic this time around that I've been in Peru. And for example, I got a gym membership, and nice. I promised myself that I would get up an hour early every day before work to hit that gym. And it was such a thing that I just repeated to myself over and over again. You're going to do this no matter what. So you might as well go to bed early. So when I'm scrolling late at night on TikTok, I'm thinking, I'm still going to make myself go to the gym at 6 a.m. Do I keep scrolling or do I turn my phone off? Because I wasn't giving myself the choice. It was either I go or I go, because one, the gym membership was a little expensive. And two, there is so much good food here in Peru. So much temptation and sugar and carbs and starch. I don't know why Peruvians like to mix carbs and starch. They're very carby and starch heavy here. But the food is so good, I can't say no. So I told myself, if I'm going to allow myself to enjoy the culinary experience of being here, I'm going to make myself hit the gym to offset that, because I didn't want to deprive myself either. So I didn't give myself an option or a choice. I just had to go. And eventually, after a couple of weeks of doing it, it was so automated that I wasn't even thinking about it. I was like half asleep, putting on my gym shoes, my gym clothes, and just heading out the door.
Good for you for having that kind of conviction, because that's not easy to just say, no, I don't care what the story is. I don't care what the excuse is. I'm going. So that's impressive. Good for you.
Well, you inspired me a lot in that aspect. Your talks really did get to me in Portugal, because it was something I was searching for. I just didn't know how to apply it in the current lifestyle that I have, being as that I'm moving around so much. It was really hard to establish a routine. But whenever I'm in a place for longer than a couple of weeks, I try to come up with a game plan of what I'm going to do while I'm here. And I'm also trying not to travel and move around every couple of weeks. So that's also something I've learned from the conference that I need to change.
No, we talked about this at the very beginning, but adapting to your environment as quickly as possible. So the first day I get somewhere, I figure out, where am I going to work out? Do I have access to a gym? If I don't have access to a gym, what's the space that I'm going to do my workouts in? Where's the grocery store? Where's the healthy food store? Where can I buy my supplements? First day, I'm like, cool, where are all these things that I can jump into my routine? So that's a big one. Just as soon as you get there, figure out, how can I stick to my routine that I know works for me, instead of spending like 2 weeks settling in and then you go find a gym and all of a sudden then you're moving on again. It's first day. Okay, where are the things that are really important for my routine?
That's a good one. What about food? What's a good tip for food?
Going out to eat is part of the lifestyle. You know it. You also meet so many people over good food. It's just an easy yes for when people are trying to coordinate plans. It's, let's go out to dinner. Yes. Okay, great. My approach is, it's inevitable to go out to eat. It's very enjoyable. So don't even think that you're going to meal prep all your meals, because that's not going to happen. Figure out a way to order healthy and eat healthy as often as you can. So I would say most of the time when you're going out to eat, you're not going to some super specialty restaurant that makes the best pasta in the world right here. Most of the time you're going to eat either for convenience or for the company. In those situations, try and make really healthy decisions, choices. So focus on baked and grilled proteins and seafood and lots of veggies and lentils and rice and quinoa and things like that. If you are going to a restaurant specifically for a type of food, go and enjoy that food and that specialty. In all the other times, try and make the healthiest choice you can. And in the simplest form, what's going to be healthy is prioritizing healthy protein, choosing complex carbs that are high in fiber, and then having healthy fats in there. And so really just choosing something that is protein-based, veggie-based. And if there is something that you want to indulge in, order it on the side and share it with people. But again, most of the time we're going to restaurants for the convenience and for the social aspect of it. So prioritize your nutrition even when you are going out to restaurants.
Yeah, definitely the socializing part is the one that gets me the most often, because you don't want to pass up a good moment with potentially meeting some really cool friends when you're like, sorry guys, I can't go out to dinner because I got a meal prep, or I'm on a diet so I can't go. Realistically, it's not going to happen, and you're not going to want to pass up those opportunities, like you said. That being said, what can you tell me? And this is just me because I need help. The free drink that the hostels always offer are what reels me to a night of one, staying out late, drinking, and then binging on some greasy food because then I dance the night away and I'm hungry at 2 a.m. Usually when I'm at home, or even here in Peru, like I'm with family, I don't drink very much. But in Europe, I was an absolute fiend. It's just part of their lifestyle. They drink wine with everything and it's really cheap. So help me. How do I control myself when I'm over there?
Oh my gosh, that's too funny. Okay, so what's your goal? To be partying less or to be drinking less when you go out and party?
I would say more of the second one, because I still like a good party. I need a good habit to build around that. So I'm not saying yes every single time it gets offered.
So I am 11 months sober and I have continued to go out to bars and clubs and dance. And I really surprised myself, but going out and dancing sober is actually really fun. And I probably have more fun now. And I'm not preaching sobriety on anyone, but like you can still have a really fun night by drinking less. And so I definitely used to have my crazy wild nights out. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, wait, I'm still allowed to have this much fun even if I don't drink at all, which I thought was never going to happen again. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't imagine going to like clubs and bars and not drinking. But I would say one of the easiest things is to push off your first drink. When people start drinking around you, say, I'm really dehydrated, I'm going to have a sparkling water first, and I'm going to order a glass of wine or a drink afterwards. And that kind of pushes you one drink behind, and you're probably not going to start pounding shots to catch up with other people. And so that is one approach. But the other approach is to having an alcoholic drink and a non-alcoholic drink. Because frequently what it comes down to is really just wanting to have something in our hand and wanting to have something to sip on. And it can get pretty psychological, where I used to go to bars and if I didn't have anything to drink, anything in my hand, I felt really awkward. I would get tired. I would get overwhelmed. And then I started ordering non-alcoholic beers. No one had any idea that I wasn't drinking. I had something to sip on. So no one was asking me, hey, why aren't you drinking? And so all night I had something to drink. I'd be sipping on it. And it gave me this social lubricant, even though there was no alcohol in it. Something I recommend is having a beer, then having a non-alcoholic beer, then having a beer, having a non-alcoholic beer. Or same thing, have a cocktail, than have a soda with a lime and then having a cocktail and then having a soda. No one can tell, but at some point, people are probably going to be more drunk than you. And you're going to be like, okay, it's time for me to go home. I'm not having as much fun with these people who are super drunk. Or you will get more tired because you're not as drunk as the other people. And you're like, okay, you know what? This is a reasonable time for me to go home. You'll probably be a little bit wiser. So you're like, if I go home now, I could probably get enough sleep. I could probably have a productive day tomorrow. So boil down, push off your first drink. Say, I'll order one in just a moment after I finish this sparkling water. And two, alternate your drinks, but always have something in your hand. If you have something in your hand, you honestly won't care if it's alcoholic or non-alcoholic. That is what I've learned.
Oh, that is such a hack. I love that because one, pushing off that first drink and alternating drinks means you're going to stay hydrated, which I am now inching slightly closer to my 30s. So my hangovers feel real now. I'm not indestructible like I was in my early 20s. So if I go out and drink all night, I'm going to feel like garbage the next day and maybe even a little bit the day after, depending on how bad I went. So that's a great trick to stay hydrated, is to have those alternating drinks and also pushing off that first drink. And like you said, better decisions. Maybe I won't talk to the dumb foreign guy who seems hot because I've had one too many.
Yes, save yourself from the actually unattractive, annoying guy.
Regardless, I still like to have a good time. I just want to do it in a more balanced way. I think in everything we do in life, anything you do in extreme is not going to be good for you. Like you said, the restrictive dieting is not good for you because long run, it's not going to do you any good. Same with the drinking and even with this moving around and partying. Like, it's really fun. I think I did a lot of it my first time around when I was nomading. Second time around and third, I'm starting to feel like I get tired more easily. I could go on more excursions, but if I've gone out way too much, I'm not going to have the energy and I'm not going to enjoy that. So my goal this year for 2024 is be more balanced in everything that I do.
I view using nutrition and fitness as a way to fuel the life that you want to live. And if we're staying out late and partying, and then we spend the weekend in bed hungover, and we skip out on all the excursions and adventures we could be going on, is that really why you signed up for this? You could have just done that in your hometown. We're here to explore cool places and go on day trips and explore the culture. And so it's like, why not use nutrition and fitness to give you the energy to A, perform really well at work and do well in your career and have the energy to then go explore and have a really fun weekend and not a weekend that you have to recover from? Can we use it as a tool to fuel the life that we actually want to live and look forward to be able to do the things that we say are our goals and dreams? That's how I look at it.
For anyone who wants to reach out to you for more advice, how can they reach out to you?
So on Instagram, I am nutritional.neuro for nutritional neuroscience. So they can follow me there. And they can also go to my website called nutritionalneuro.com. They can learn a little bit more about me. But I offer everybody a free one-on-one session just to come up with a strategy plan like you and I did together as well, just to get the ball rolling, just to figure out a place to start and get healthy. And yeah, I talk a lot about how food affects our mental health and brain health. So anybody who's interested in that, reach out to me or watch my videos, learn. Yeah, I'm super open to chatting with people. So,
are you on YouTube or are you doing Instagram Reels?
Instagram.
Awesome. Okay, so everyone go follow her Instagram account. I've seen you've been posting a lot of educational stuff on there as well. So even if you just want the tips and tricks, check out her profile. But I highly recommend taking advantage of that one-on-one. It really helped me change a couple things around in the lifestyle that I am in with the traveling and trying to also incorporate my fitness goals. So I would highly recommend to check that out. Reach out to Veronica. She's such an awesome, amazing person. And she really works with you to work around your mindset and your own hurdles, because everybody has their own things that they struggle with. It might not be the same as yours. So that's why I really value that one-on-one. Thanks so much, Veronica.
All right. I'll talk to you soon. Bye, Andrea.
Thank you.